When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi Voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast. If you're watching this live on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button below as well as the bell button to be alerted whenever we go live on air. I'm very pleased now to welcome Sami Pienamaki, CEO of Yola, to the podcast. Yola is the company behind the open source smartphone operating system Sailfish OS. And we're going to talk today about the implications of Huawei possibly losing access to Google's Android, or at least the Google components of Android. Sami, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for taking the time to chat to Tech Central today, all the way from Finland.
Thank you, and greetings from Finland.
Firstly, tell me a bit about Sailfish. You're based in Finland. I believe Sailfish has its origins in the Linux-based Migo OS, previously developed by Finland's Nokia, as well as the US chip giant Intel. That partnership has since ended, but tell us a bit about the history and the development of this operating system and what's happened over the years with this OS.
Sure, certainly, happy to. So that's very true. We have the background in the former Nokia Migo project. The company was established in 2011. At the time, Nokia decided to ditch the investment to Migo and took their strategic move to the Windows Phone platform. And we saw the opportunity to carry on the development of the platform as we saw that an open Linux-based platform still has a chance in this world. And it's a while ago already, actually. It's eight years ago since we started this project. And it's been quite a roller coaster, not an easy ride, I would say, to develop a third mobile operating system to the world. But we are here.
So what's happened in the intervening years since the Migo OS platform development ended? How did Sailfish emerge, and what have you guys developed?
Well, a couple of first years we were more on the development mode internally and carrying financing. It's a startup, of course, eventually in the beginning. But then we came out with our phone in December 2013. As it turned out to be that we couldn't simply just develop the operating system, but we had to actually develop a hardware where to put the operating system in a way order to prove for the industry that we can actually make a commercial grade product out of the software. And that's what we ended up in doing, and brought out a couple of models of our own Yola branded handsets and tablets to the market. It was from 2013, 14, 15, those years. And then at the same time, maturized the platform, the Sailfish operating system platform over the years. Now we are in the Sailfish OS version 3 that we started to roll out end of last year. We don't do handsets or devices anymore ourselves. That honestly didn't turn out to be very profitable.
Right.
And at the same time, it was always the primary strategy of and the value of the company for our investors has been the software. So we are purely a software company nowadays and develop the Sailfish operating system and license it to device vendors around the world.
So it's an open source operating system. You have, I presume, a community of developers, passionate developers working on building this around the world?
That's actually very correct, and that's something that I think the whole team is very proud of, and the community itself is very proud of, that this project, Sailfish OS project, truly uniquely was the one that was able to capture the true nature and the heart of the MIMO and the Migo community that was really built by Intel and Nokia and those folks at the time. This project was really able to capture that spirit and continue it. Therefore, we have a very lively and vibrant community actually around the world developing Sailfish operating system together with us. It's really in our DNA and everyday life here.
So what's your company's business model? Do you sell licenses to handset manufacturers? What's the model?
The model is a licensing, definitely. It's a licensing model. And whereas we make it very transparent and clear, we have a royalty business model. So every handset or mobile device that carries a Sailfish operating system has a royalty fee that our partners pay to us. That's a very flat, simple model in principle where we have.
So if I wanted to buy a smartphone device today running Sailfish OS, where would I find one?
Well, we don't actively offer it in the consumer market, as you may have recognized, but this is more like an offering for enterprise and governmental users, and not probably there in South Africa available at the very moment. That's something we are looking into. But nevertheless, our customers then roll out these devices in, for example, in corporate enterprise solutions. And we do have a major partner in, for example, in Russia, where Rostelecom, the leading telco operator there, is deploying Sailfish OS-based solution for their customers that are in the enterprise and governmental sector in Russia, for example.
So who are the companies, who are the government organizations that look at the software and use it, and why are they choosing this over, say, commercial alternatives like Android?
Well, the general thing with Sailfish OS, and it's been really our strategy now for the past years, is that that we have geared the asset towards corporate use, enterprise use, and governmental use, where we clearly can offer better grounds to build privacy respecting and security solutions. From the very foundation that we have an open platform, you can authorize, you can read our source code. It's all built on top of that, and that's really the core value that we can offer compared to the competitors.
So it's organizations that are have very stringent security requirements that would typically use this.
Corporations, yes, corporations, enterprises, and then of course it can go further from there to, of course, to governmental use as well, where let's say a in definition by default a transparency is required, so that that you can build a trusted solution on top of it.
Do you have ambitions in the consumer market? What are your plans over the coming years?
Well, never say never. I'm an entrepreneur myself, but I think we had our fair try of that, and it was very difficult, honestly.
Yes.
We tried that and actually invested fairly heavily on that for several years, but it didn't fly. We had quite sizable operations. For example, in India, we launched together with one of the leading smartphone vendors there, big time with the Sailfish consumer handset and so on. But we just couldn't ramp it up to the sufficient volume levels to make it actually a profitable business. So that's why we changed our strategy focused to corporate enterprise governmental sector in 2016. We've been there focusing now for past 3 years, built a lot of the value to the asset for targeting for such users. So that's where we are today. But of course, never say never.
and of course, there's been some very interesting developments just in the last week or so regarding Huawei and the U.S. government and Google and Android, which I'm sure you have been watching with, as an independent third player, you've been watching with a great deal of interest. It's possible that this situation between China and the U.S. Will still be resolved in Huawei's favor. But equally, it might not be. What do you make of the U.S. government's decision around Huawei, firstly, and what do you think the potential implications are of this move?
Well, first of all, I think this, even regardless how it gets implemented in the end of the day, I think this move already since last Sunday changed the mobile industry already. That's very, very clear. Now, everybody is actually made aware and alerted that actually there is this kind of heavy business risk if you bet your whole business in simply in one platform that can be subject to political actions. So this is something that happened in the industry already, and now I would say it's not definitely limited to this big Chinese device vendor, but others as well who are being alarmed now that hey, we should look at our strategic positioning here and long term strategic values and how can we keep competitive in the longer run as well. And that's something, of course, that being one of the actual alternatives there in the market, we've been there for quite a while. We are actually truly the only in-market non-American solution in the smartphones OS space at the moment. Of course, it puts us very much in the spotlight.
Yes.
You can imagine getting these requests quite a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, so are you getting a lot of calls then from Chinese smartphone manufacturers interested in your operating system?
Positively, yes.
Mm-hmm. And are you expecting that to result in your OS being implemented on some of these devices? And I mean, China is obviously
a
very
huge... Well, of course, that's something... Yeah, yeah, certainly, of course, that's something we pursue. But at the same time, I have to be realistic and also honest that there is no simple silver bullet here. Entering into a consumer market, even though such a disruption is now being created and set in the scene, it's still not like a direct silver bullet solution here.
Yeah.
Our offering is not optimal for consumer sector at the moment, even though we have a fair number of consumer users.
Yes.
But really, our focus has been more in security, privacy, respecting solutions targeted for the corporate enterprise sector.
If you were to pivot, if you were suddenly to get a lot of interest from major smartphone manufacturers, particularly in the Chinese market, how quickly could you pivot to redesign your OS so that it's suited for the mass consumer market?
Well, it's not really about redesign so much. I would say that thanks to our DNA and our genes coming from Nokia, I was there for myself for a long career before establishing this company. We do have that user experience, no question about it. The selfish user experience has got very high marks in different kind of user reviews, and it's been regarded as a very good advanced smartphone user experience. So I would say we have all those bits and pieces in place, but still competing head to head in the consumer market with the dominant Android, that still is a massive task,
mm-hmm.
and that requires it is possible, of course, it is possible if you team up with the right players, but that really requires heavy, high-level partnerships to be established there.
Yeah. I believe from what I read ahead of this interview that Selfish OS will run some, if not all, Android apps. Is that correct?
That's very correct. And that is something actually which makes us very interesting as well. The operating system is not using Android Core. It's actually a native Linux operating system and open source based. But we do have an optional component in our architecture. For example, our fans use it in our community offering, which enables you to run all Android applications in your daily device. And that's how, for example, our sizable community enjoys the product every day as their daily driver.
Right.
As they can use their popular WhatsApps and Facebooks and so on in their devices.
And can you sideload all of the Google apps as well?
Well, you can. We of course, as a vendor, we don't offer those. But yes. As a user, it's up to you. It's your choice. You
right.
make the license agreement. So.
Yeah. Now, I know that there are going to be some people listening to or watching this podcast who want to know whether they, you know, they've got an Android phone or they've got an old Android phone in a drawer somewhere, and they're keen to experiment. Can they download this operating system and install it on their handset?
That's actually a good point. They can actually do that, and mm-hmm. We have established a community program for that. It's called Selfish X. It's available in our website, where you can download Sailfish operating system to selected handset models. Beyond that, the community has ported Sailfish to tens of different device vendor models and is actively doing it as we speak. And the nature of the program, and I just mentioned Sailfish X program, is to, in a way, handpick some of the most popular community ports and bring those available for, let's say, tech-savvy users who are interested to experiment, just like you said. So that's exactly actually available.
I think I might have to try that on one of my old phones. What are some of the key smartphone models that are supported by? Is it Sailfish X, you said?
The program is called Sailfish X. Mm-hmm. And officially, we support selected Sony Xperia models. We have done a good collaboration together with Sony Open Devices program now for a couple of years. And that portfolio is the officially supported that we have available in our website. In addition to that, there is a number of tens of different models from various device vendors that the community has ported Sailfish operating system to run into.
Right. Well, I do have a Sony Xperia in a drawer right here, so I think I'll have a gander this weekend.
Well, we're happy to help you.
And see if I can get it to work. But it's Sailfish X. Is that on a separate website to the Yola website?
It's in yola.com. You can find it there.
Okay. I'll go and have a look. So Huawei, just coming back to Huawei, they've said they're developing their own operating system. In fact, it's a plan B, as they've described it, and it's been in development for several years. It's called the Hongmeng OS. We don't know too much about it at the moment, except that Huawei has promised it will run all Android applications. If you're a third independent third pop player in the smartphone operating system market, looking at the situation that Huawei has found itself in now, what advice would you give to them as they look at their options?
Well, first of all, it's very wise to look at different options. That's for sure, and I would recommend that to anybody in this business at the very moment that as we see the recent political acts can make your business strategy, if you're purely relying on leveraging Android and Google services, you can be in a risky path. So therefore, I would recommend to anybody in the industry at the moment to look and seek for other alternatives and in a way diversify your business execution and see where, for example, in certain verticals, be it a enterprise vertical, for example, or be it a feature phone vertical or smart feature phone, something like that, to see that whether it would make sense actually to in a way pivot and use a different platform.
Okay. Just as an aside, you used to be with Nokia in a previous life. Nokia made some, let's call them, interesting decisions over the years in terms of mobile platforms. It was kind of caught off guard, I think, by the introduction by Apple of the iPhone, and then, of course, made the famous or infamous decision to go with Windows Phone. Looking back at it all now, what do you think Nokia should have done differently?
Well, first of all, I'm of course, and we all in the team are very grateful for the experience we got with the team, and it created a great platform, and that's why we are existing here. So that's first of all the thing. What was done by Nokia at the current status as a strategy is, of course, Nokia's decision. I'm no one to judge that. Personally, I believe, of course, as I have established this company, I believe in this strategy. I believe in the fact that there is a place in the world for an open platform, which is based in Linux, which is based in open source, that can offer a platform for innovation. And that's why we are pursuing and venturing in this. Mm-hmm.
All right, diplomatically answered.
you can imagine how many times I have got that very same question.
I'm sure. So I wanted to look a bit about at competition in the mobile smartphone operating system market. We've seen many open source smartphone OSs attempt to have a go at it over the years. We've seen, of course, the Firefox OS, Ubuntu Touch, developed by or headed by South Africa's own Mark Shuttleworth.
But Canonical,
exactly. And those and others really failed to catch on. And Android in the intervening years has just become stronger and stronger. Why do you think that is the case? And why did those particular platforms fail? And what can Sailfish and Yola perhaps do differently and perhaps learn from perhaps some of the mistakes those companies made?
Well, I think in a way we did the same mistakes to some extent.
Okay.
So many of these options that you mentioned actually tried their fair share as well of directly competing in the consumer market head to head with the Android offering, and that was very difficult. We tried our fair share of that, and we proved that you can do it to some extent. You can provide actually very nice devices and user experience that people like, and you get very high marks in the reviews, and you get plenty of media attention to it and so on. But in the end of the day, it was just very, very difficult to break through with to ramp up the volumes there in a reasonable level in the competition situation there. So therefore, what we did is that we simply geared our strategy to a very focused vertical, like offer this purely, for example, to the enterprise sector.
Right.
And that is something that maybe any of the mentioned alternatives could have done equally, like we did. But for a number of reasons, they decided not to, or they ran out of money or runway or came up with some technical limitations. They couldn't swift the asset to be reused in or repurposed for different kind of use and so on. So that's, I think, where we succeeded. We repurposed the asset a little bit, not actually technically too much. We found our, in a way, vertical niche in the market.
Yeah.
We got some good deployment partners now, like mentioned, Rostelecom in Russia, heavily pushing this. So that's how we made our way there.
At this stage of the development of the market, is it, in your view, even possible to take on Android? Has it become too dominant? Is it possible to actually build at this late stage a credible third consumer smartphone OS play?
It is definitely possible, and exactly that's actually what we are doing as well. But what I'm argumenting here is that it's very difficult directly head-to-head competition in the consumer sector for the Android market, simply because of the application ecosystem and the vendor lock-in there is with the Google Services API. So that's the That's really the difficult one. But at the same time, the ecosystem of building mobile devices is actually really nicely optimized of developing in a way off the shelf hardware, which is easily accessible if you have the right software architecture to put on top of it. And that's what we have done.
Right.
We have optimized our software architecture so that actually almost any Android device which is used with Android operating system without any hardware modifications is actually directly compatible with Sailfish OS. So that gets you to access to the latest and the greatest hardware from the mobile industry, and then brings you the time to market, and then you can focus your devices further to certain verticals. These verticals also can be very profitable. You can definitely build different kind of business models there, and the price points and the profitability of serving the enterprise sector can be much better than as we have seen in, for example, the profit lines of the known consumer device vendors. It's been very difficult to compete in the Android consumer market for the device vendors as well. Their profits are very thin.
Yeah. Maybe just a follow-up to that question then. We see what happened in desktop PCs and how Windows became utterly dominant. And we've seen a similar trend in smartphone OSs with Android becoming dominant on something like 90% of all smartphone devices. Do you think the OS, the operating system market, generally speaking, ends up tending to become a monopoly over time?
Well, I wouldn't like to believe so. I think that simply, in a way, limits the natural human innovation that there would be only two operating systems from now until forever in this whole world.
Yeah.
I think, as seen in the recent political acts as well, that there is plenty of forces and counterforces in the world to pave the way to have more options available and in a way also limit the business risk for big multi-billion companies. Mm-hmm. And that's why we believe in this strategy. That's why we are offering Sailfish OS in the first place.
Yep. That,
I personally can't really believe that it's going to be forever just a duopoly or even a monopoly, almost like it is nowadays. So.
Sure. So before I let you go, Sami, where do you see this China-US rift leading in the next couple of years? What's it going to mean? What is the smartphone OS market going to look like? We've obviously got Huawei talking about is actively developing the Hongmeng OS as an alternative to Android for its devices. We don't know if it's going to sell that to other handset manufacturers. How do you see the Hongmeng OS? Do you see it being successful in the market? And how do you see Sailfish OS playing, particularly in the consumer market, as all these balls get juggled and as all these geopolitical developments occur? How do you see Sailfish playing in the market, and particularly the consumer market, in a couple of years from now?
Well, first of all, I would like to thank everybody here that actually this being in this seat at the moment is getting utterly interesting at the moment.
Right.
It was honestly getting a little bit of dull for the past 2 years because the competitors drifted away.
Yes.
And we were pretty much the only one offering something over to Android. But now it's actually back in the table. And that puts this into a very interesting position. And whenever that kind of a disruption happens, like I claim it already happened since past Sunday, that creates simply business opportunities for the industry. And hopefully accelerates the innovation. It's always been in the human history that scarcity creates innovation,
and yes,
that's definitely going to happen in this situation. If you look for example the major mobile industry event MWC Barcelona, it's been honestly a bit dull for the past 2 years. If you look. You walk around there, all the devices look the same.
Yes.
Everybody is carrying the same user experience. So where's the innovation? So that definitely will change in the coming years. And I'm more than welcome, happy to see any alternative to flourish. And I wish all the best, of course, for Huawei, for Hongmeng exercise. I think it's just great to see it to happen and come to the market.
How successful do you think they'll be?
Well, time will show. They have plenty of resources, of course.
Yes.
And it's a great company also. I do know that. And I think they definitely have a fair chance to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Sami Pini Ek. I beg your pardon. Your name is very difficult to pronounce.
Don't worry. It's from Finland.
Perhaps you pronounce it for our listeners and viewers, because I understand I'm going to butcher it.
Pieni Mäki.
There we go. Sami is Sami, and I won't try and pronounce your surname again, is CEO of Yola. That's spelled J-O-L-L-A. What is Yola's website, Sami?
Yola.com, J-O-L-L-A.com.
Very easy. Thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today, and thanks for your time.
Thank you. Take care.